we all go through seasons, so depending on how much I'm pouring into each bucket. But as of right now, I'm really focused on recovery and mobility and some foundational strength exercises, because I did get injured in January, knee injured, so I haven't been able to fully jump like I used to. So I'm really trying right now to focus on, you know, whole food nutrition, red light therapy, meditation, mindset. I do a little bit of everything. It's hard to kind of put percentages because I am a really like type A personality where I'm a go-getter. I like to do everything all in, to the point where sometimes I feel like I might be too obsessed with these gadgets and everything, to the point where I need to like step away. I'm like, all right, let me spend some time with family. Let's go out, have some pizza. Let's like take care of the other stuff. That there's a aspect to health where there's also relationship and being around family and community on that. But honestly, brother, I'm all in. I'm everywhere with my holistic approach to health.
He's a best-selling author, award-winning filmmaker, inspirational speaker, certified nutrition coach, plant-powered athlete, and host of the number one holistic health podcast in the world, Nathan Crane.
Hey, 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 welcome to the podcast. I'm Nathan Crane, your host. I'm excited that you're joining me for today's conversation. Before we get started, I want to let you know about a very special offer I've got for you, my listener. If you're looking for a great tasting, nutrient-dense, high-quality protein powder to fuel your body, head over to plantpoweredathlete.com and get your plant-powered protein. I've got a 10% discount code for you. Just use Nathan Podcast. Plant-powered protein is 100% organic and kosher certified, with a powerful combination of high-quality plant proteins like quinoa, brown rice, pea, flax, and hemp. It's also infused with three scientifically verified adaptogens: ashwagandha, maca, and ginseng, for more energy and recovery. And you can get 10% off right now. Just use the code NathanPodcast and head over to plantpoweredathlete.com to get your plant-powered protein today. All right, that's it. Let's dive into the show. Welcome back to the podcast. I am excited to have Cayetano here with us, also known as the Street Beast, a parkour athlete who also happens to be plant-based. Kaye, brother, thanks for coming on the podcast, man. Awesome to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I found you on Instagram. Just loved what you're doing, man. Sharing your journey as an athlete, but you know, more than just being athletic, which you are incredibly athletic. I mean, doing, you know, Ninja Warrior stuff and parkour stuff. And I know you do strength training and weightlifting, all kinds of other stuff as well. And being, you know, plant-based athlete, two things that I think are awesome. You're also into more of a, what I would call like a deep health approach or holistic health approach. I see, you know, morning routines, you do a meditation and doing, you know, red light therapy and, you know, more recovery type stuff, more holistic health, which I think is awesome. I think too often we get focused on one aspect of health. Like it's just all about diet, all about nutrition, which is good. It's good to focus on diet and nutrition to improve our health, improve our performance as athletes. But if you forget about all the other stuff that actually regenerates our tissues and rebuilds our mitochondria and detoxes our bodies from heavy metals and toxins and improves our, you know, muscle protein synthesis and improves our recovery and helps us be better athletes and better human beings. If you forget about all that other stuff, nutrition only ends up playing, you know, a small role, right? Comparatively, I think nutrition's big. I used to think it was 80 or 90%, but now, you know, after 17 years in the health space, I'm like, it's probably more like 20 to 30%, somewhere in there. You could do all the right foods and nutrients and the best diet in the world, but if you're not sleeping well, you're not recovering well, you're under chronic stress all the time, you're exposed to tons of toxins every day, you know, you're breathing really terrible air and drinking really polluted water, you know, all these other things, your stressful relationship, you're not taking care of your mental, emotional, spiritual, environmental, relational health, guess what? That diet's only going to play a small part. So anyway, that's kind of my perspective on it. It seems like you seem to approach things a little bit more holistically, which Would you agree with that? How do you look at health in general?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. And I agree with you 100%. And I have a similar story where when I first got into this, I was like, oh man, I'm all into nutrition. And I thought it was, you know, around like 80, 90% to the point where I was obsessed with, you know, whole foods and you know, recipes and everything. But then as my journey continued, I realized that, wow, there's actually a lot more aspects to health that contribute more than the nutrition. Like you said, the sleep, the recovery, the spiritual aspect of it, I think is so undermined and not really talked about enough. So yeah, 100%.
So where do you spend majority of your time when it comes to being an athlete? Like, let's look at the different buckets of health, right? And maybe you could break it down by percentages of each roughly. Like, how much time do you spend training each day versus how much time do you spend really focusing on dialing in your sleep? And we could talk about some of your sleep strategies versus things like meditation and red light therapy, you know, diet, nutrition, et cetera. Maybe you could break that down into those buckets, the percentages, and then maybe we can get into like what you actually do to optimize your performance as an athlete.
Yeah, I think we all go through seasons. So I think depending on the season and depending on how much I'm pouring into each bucket. But as of right now, I'm really focused on recovery and mobility and some foundational strength exercises because I did get injured in January. So I haven't been able to jump on my knee injured. So I haven't been able to fully jump like I used to. So I'm really trying right now to focus on, you know, whole food nutrition, red light therapy, meditation, mindset, sleep. You know, I do a little bit of everything. It's hard to kind of put percentages because I am a really like type A personality where I'm a go-getter. I like to do everything all in. So to the point where I sometimes feel like I might be too obsessed with these gadgets and everything to the point where I need to like step away. I'm like, all right, let me spend some time with family. Let's go out. Let's have some pizza. Let's like, you know, take care of the other stuff that, you know, you can't, you know, there's a aspect to health where there's also relationships and being around family and community that I think is my biggest weakness. So I'm also trying to focus on that, but honestly, brother, I'm all in. I'm everywhere with my holistic approach to health.
That's awesome, man. What'd you do to your knee? You know, with the cold and flu season here, it's critically important that we enhance and strengthen our immune systems. Yes, would you agree? The problem is, though, that there's so much confusion out there when it comes to what actually works for our bodies and for our health. Well, I'll tell you what I used. I use Maison Beljanski's wellness products. Maison Beljanski's products are backed by science to not only help empower the immune system, but can support detoxification and contribute to our overall health. Coming from Europe, the all-natural Beljanski formulas are now available in the United States and are recommended by top doctors everywhere. A lot of the colleagues I work with, functional medicine practitioners that work with patients with all kinds of diseases, are recommending Maison Beljanski's products to their very own patients. As a special sponsor of this podcast, Maison Beljanski has included a very special discount offer for all of my listeners. You can get 15% off your first order using the promo code Nathan, and you'll always enjoy free shipping when you order 4 products or more. You can grab your wellness products today at maisonbeljanski.com. That's MAISONBELJANSKI, maisonbeljanski.com, and use code Nathan for 15% off. Hey, so if you've been following me for any time now, you know that I often talk about Helin 951, the nitrogen fermented organic soy drink. I first learned about it at an integrative cancer event years ago, and I've been taking this myself for a long time. It's so potent and it has a strong flavor. So I add their organic mint powder to it and it's easy to take any time of day. I usually take it in the mornings. You know, I'm constantly looking into natural health products and the ones that catch my eye are the ones with years of proven results and the science and research to back them up. I love that Healin 951 checks all of these boxes. Made from a unique 100% organic soybean grown in the high mountains of Mongolia, Healin 951 has some incredible health properties. Just a few of the benefits are more energy, better sleep, detox, longevity, better immune function, and some fantastic anti-cancer compounds. The folks over at Healin have made a page just for our followers to learn more. You can head over to Healin951.com/crane. That's Healin951.com/crane. They have special discounted packages there for you to get you started. And if you use the promo code CRANE, C-R-A-N-E, at checkout, they will also give you free shipping. So head over and grab this special offer for yourself and use the free shipping promo code CRANE, or just give them a call if that's easier for you. They are so easy to work with and have over 32 years in the industry. Again, that's Healin951.com/crane. Have you heard of PEMF therapy for cancer? Well, this podcast is brought to you by Dr. Pollock, and he wants to share with you the groundbreaking research of pulsed electromagnetic field therapy in the treatment of cancer. Studies show PEMF therapy can help control the cancer process and give safe, non-toxic, and non-invasive symptom management. PEMF therapy may enhance other cancer support and treatments, lower inflammation, and promote tissue healing. Studies show it's possible to improve your general well-being and recuperate from surgery, radiation, and chemo better and more quickly. Embrace a comprehensive approach to cancer treatment with PEMF therapy, a vital tool on your path to prevention, treatment, and recovery. For caring and professional guidance and recommendations from Dr. Pollock, go to drpollock.com/intro to cancer. That's drpawluk.com/intro to cancer.
I had an open wound infection in January. It got infected and I had to go to the hospital. They drained it out. And so I'm still recovering from that.
Oh man. Yeah, it sucks. It's really hard when you're that kind of person that like wants to train all the time. You know, you've got goals, you've got passions, ambitions, training has become like a part of your life. And then you have these injuries that pop up and it like prevents you from doing what you want to do. And yet like what I do, unfortunately, is like keep pushing through the injury when I should back off. Like the hardest thing for me to do is back off. Like, hey, just take some time off. Yeah. I'm like, take some time off, you know? It's like, yeah, I have to like convince myself, persuade myself, because it is an addiction. It becomes an addiction. And, you know, and I'm just like, well, it's pain. It'll go away. You know, it's that David Goggins mentality where it's just like, I've had that my whole life where it's like, oh, it's just a little bit of pain. I'll just keep going. It'll go away. And the problem is sometimes it does go away, but other times it gets worse, you know? So I'm dealing with the same thing right now, a knee injury and a shoulder injury that just, we're really just overtraining, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day for months on end. And then it just, you know, turned from a small little thing into a chronic thing. And so I have backed off. I do physical therapy. I do all these recovery things as well. I've backed off a lot of stuff significantly trying to heal it. But the problem is like stopping something completely, you know, because you just want to keep doing it. I know for a lot of people, it's the opposite. Like they need a kick in the ass to get them going, you know, get to the gym, get to training that. But I think once you find something you really enjoy, and I watched one of your Instagram posts, by the way, where you talked about this. I loved hearing you talk about it because I teach this all the time. To people who have a hard time getting to the gym and exercising and staying motivated, it's like you were saying, find something that you enjoy doing. Find an exercise that you enjoy doing. Whatever that is, doesn't really matter because that's what keeps you coming back for more.
Yeah, 100%, brother. You're speaking my language. I'm the exact way. And I'm fortunately, finally, my hard-headedness has learned to slow down, to not always exercise. I don't always have to train And even right now, where I have to, had to slow down, had to change my mindset around training because of my knee. Now I'm really focusing on mobility, and that's really distracting me from, not being able to fully jump like I was before. So really focusing on the splits, on touching my toes, and doing all these mobility moves that I absolutely love as well. So it's just shifting that mindset, and because I have the discipline, obviously from training, because I love training so much. Me and you have that in common. But now it's just changing that discipline and putting it toward like, all right, today is a recovery day. Let's focus on active recovery. Let's do yoga. Let's do meditation. This stuff is good for you. Like, you're disciplined, so discipline yourself to do that. Because yeah, you're right. Most people need more. That's why most people are overweight and healthy and unhealthy. But there are some select few people like ourselves that actually do too much, and we need to learn how to have balance and also fit in these recovery modalities that, you know, our body needs. Like, the body has a system where we stress it, and then we have to give it time to rebuild itself. And if we don't give that time to rebuild itself, then we're cheating the system. We're not letting it optimize how strong it can actually get if we don't let it recover before we jump back into another training session.
It's so true. There's that mindset I've certainly been guilty of for the last 6 years, that it's like more training, I need more training to make more gains, right? And I get adapted to large amounts of volume, and you do make a lot of gains, but there is a diminishing point of return where, you know, too much volume and not enough recovery, then your gains either stay stagnant, or you actually go backwards, you get injured, you overtrain, or your gains are very, very, very tiny, you know, versus like, okay, if I put more time and energy on recovery, on sleep, on nutrition, on meditation, on, you know, sauna, red light therapy, et cetera, reduce volume a little bit, and then maybe you can see your gains actually improve. A good example of that, I think, is bodybuilders. Bodybuilders who are really focused on hypertrophy and, you know, muscle size and strength, like, they'll spend maximum 2 hours at the gym, you know, an hour to 2 hours. They go in one or two body parts, boom, hammer them 8 to 12 sets in most cases, chest and triceps, you know, and then they go home. It's like, that's about it, you know, and the next day they hit other body parts, the next day they hit other body parts, and they're resting those body parts for a couple of days in between. And over time and years of doing that, they get massive, massive gains. Now, there's the natural bodybuilders who, you know, get great gains over time, who can optimize with diet, nutrition, and sleep and things like that. And then there's the unnatural, let's say I don't even like using the term enhance. It's the drugs, you know, the drug users, steroid users, let's put it that way. I think enhanced is too gentle of a term. It's like, nope, you're using drugs, you're using PEDs, yeah. You're using steroids. Yeah. Like, that's what it is. It's not enhanced, it's steroids, it's drugs. You know, I think people are enhanced when they're, you know, actually enhancing their body through natural methods. Obviously, I'm biased towards natural, clearly. But, you know, that's a good example, right, where you get enough rest and recovery in between the body parts to actually recover, so that then that's where your body rebuilds and grows, obviously. But I've definitely been guilty of, like, just pushing to the point where it does become injury. And how old are you?
I just turned 30.
Okay. So, yeah, you're figuring it out, you know, younger than I have in terms of, you know, listening to the body and learning to back off when you need to back off. It's a valuable skill set to have for sure. But so what does your mobility routine look like right now? And like, what have you seen in terms of benefits and gains and things like that?
So I follow this gym in Australia called Unity Gym.
Unity?
And there's these two, yeah, Unity Gym. They don't post much new content anymore, but their old content, their old podcasts were really nice to go back to. There's these two Australian brothers that have trained under Ido Portal and a bunch of other mobility experts, and they've created a program that was I was once a member a few years ago, so I went back to their programs, and they have a flexibility program that I just follow to a T. And I also supplement that with their, they have a pressed handstand program as well. And, but basically it's a bunch of loaded stretching. So for example, like when you go to touch your toes, instead of just doing that with your own body weight, you would actually hold on to a kettlebell. Like maybe, let's say you start off with like 25 pound kettlebell, then you slowly go down and that kettlebell helps you get closer to touching your toes, for example, and you do reps like that. So it's called loaded stretching. I do a lot of loaded stretching and mobility. And one thing I've learned too is the difference between passive and active, because a lot of us just hold the stretch with our, but we should actually have active mobility as well. That's what's more functional is flexing the muscle as we go through the flexibility movements to get strength in different ranges of motion. So really doing that, doing lateral lunges, Cossack squats have been really nice. Some yoga flows as well. I was gonna curse for a second. My bad.
Oh, you're good. You're good. Yeah, you can say whatever you want. It's all good.
Okay. I was gonna do the ass to grass squats with a weighted vest is nice. And then just sitting there for long periods of time, kind of putting that extra weight on you helps you stay there longer. So just different types like that. I tend to have tight hips. So I've been really focusing on just loaded mobility around that. And then also press to handstand apparently is a lot of mobility training as well around the hips and core. There's a lot of core mobility training around that. So that's what I've been focusing on.
Yeah, the difference between active and passive stretching is pretty substantial. You know, my research on stretching has been more on people 50 and older. That's demographic that I've served, you know, the past decade plus in terms of helping with health outcomes. Now I'm working a lot more with athletes, but in the older demographics, you're, you know, just stretching at all, passive, active, you're doing loaded, you're doing where you're tensing the muscle as you go through it, hold it for 5 seconds, relax, deepen. I forget the name of what you call that. RFF PNF. Stretch. What is that? RPF, PNF, PNF, PNF stretching. All of those things have shown improvement as you age. And flexibility is one of the super important things you need to focus on as you age. People pull muscles easier, fall down and have trouble getting up, you know, lose balance, you break a hip, these kinds of things. So just having some additional range of motion, some additional flexibility as you get older can actually save your life. You know, I give a presentation on that and it's super important. You'd be so surprised at how many people can stand on one foot for more than 10 seconds who are over 50.
Oh my God,
the numbers are really small. I just did a presentation on this, had about 400 people in the room. Most of them were 50 and older. And, you know, majority of people couldn't stand on one foot for more than like 20 seconds. And then we had our, you know, you could tell the people who were doing yoga, they were on one foot for 2 minutes, and, you know, one leg up and, you know, arms up and stuff like this. We made it fun.
Yeah.
Gave away t-shirts and prizes and stuff. But most people, so they lose balance. You lose balance and flexibility as you don't use it as you age. But also for athletes, having that more active range of motion, that more active stretch definitely helps prevent injury, right? Helps prevent injury and makes you more functional in the sense that whether it's squats or snatches or clean and jerks or gymnastics or what you know, parkour, ninja, you know, ninja warrior stuff or any other sport, really. I mean, look at basketball, look at the way you move, soccer, you know, you're cutting any, you know, tennis, you're turning, twisting, things like this. Having that extra range of motion that is active, meaning your muscles are used to, you know, tensing and tightening up as you're moving through that extended range of motion, absolutely helps prevent injury, but also gives you a better performance, gives you a better outcome, gives you more power and strength to be able to pull from, right?
Yeah, if you have more access to more ranges of motion as an athlete, you can First off, you're more less prone to injury. So if you're putting in yourself in awkward positions all the time, if you train in a range of motion regularly, your tendons and ligaments are stronger. So you have less prone to strains, tears, all that good stuff. So I put a high emphasis on mobility and definitely animal type movements. Kind of like animal flow or primal type movements. I'll do squats, I'll do crawls, and I'll try to mimic some of these animals like spiders, bear crawls, monkey crawls, ape crawls, stuff like that. Put yourself on the floor again, because we're sitting constantly now in modern day, and we forget how to be on the floor. So people are so uncomfortable just sitting on the floor. They can't, you know, as a child, it's so easy, but then as we grow up, we lose that ability. So I put a, and you know, my job, I'm on the computer most of the time. So I try to sit in a lotus position all day if I can, or I get microdosing some squats here and there. But my mobility routine is high
squats,
emphasis.
I like that.
Yeah. If I feel like I've been sitting for too long, I'll get up and I'm like, all right, what can I do? Let me do some squats. Let me do some pull-ups, something quick just to get the blood flowing, just to get my joints into that range of motion and make sure that they don't forget to be active in those ranges of motion. So I think that's mobility is super important.
That's awesome. Yeah, you mentioned Ido Portal earlier. I found him, I don't know, a handful of years ago and just geeked out on his channels, watching his stuff. Awesome. You know, just what you're talking about is like these animal movements, these kind of, you know, non-generic type of end range movements and motions that, you know, increase your range of motion, but also your strength. And just watching his stuff is really cool. It's really inspiring, right? Like all the stuff that he can do and how he moves his body. And I think he worked with, didn't he work with Conor McGregor at one point and kind of helped him a few
years back?
Yeah,
I don't know what their relationship was. But yeah, I think they worked together before one of his fights.
Yeah, I think he was kind of just guiding him through some stuff and helping him, you know, get better, basically. Yeah, that's really cool. That's a big part of your routine. I definitely need to add in more of that. I've always like added in mobility, like before I train and after I train. I think over the last couple of years, you know, mobility has always been important to me. I think as I got more mobile, I kind of put less focus on it, but I'm at the point now where it's like, I need to really ramp up my mobility routine again, you know, especially dealing with a couple injuries. It's like, okay, this is something I need to put a lot more focus on now. And you're kind of, you know, reminding me that, that I need it. And I think everybody tuning in, you know, could benefit from adding more mobility into their day. What does yours look like? Like how much time do you spend a day on improving mobility?
I'm actually trying to get better at it because I think it's super important, and especially for me that I'm sitting most of the time, even though I'm active, working wise, I'm always sitting. So in the morning, 100%, I'm either working out, and if I'm working out, then the first 10 to 15 minutes is basic mobility and animal movements. I call it monkey flow. So I'm my program that I'm developing is monkey fuel, monkey flow, monkey mind. So I have just core exercises that I always do that I really think are important for to always keep active and always have that in your tool set to be able to drop into a squat, to be able to do certain crawls, to be able to hang from a bar. So there's certain things that I like to do 10 to 15 minutes before a workout. And then if it's an active rest day, then I'll do probably an hour mobility, in the morning. So in the morning, I always love to start my day. There are certain things I do right before, but part of my morning routine is movement, whether it's a workout or strictly like mobility. And then at night, if I'm not dead, I usually do like, I'd like to do 20 to 30 minutes of mobility before that last hour of where I just relax before I go to bed. So ideally twice a day.
Nice, nice.
And then the microdosing throughout the day. If I feel like I've been sitting around for too long, then I might take like, I might go for like a 10, 15 minute walk. And then in between there, I might do some squats, or I might do some pull-ups, I might do some handstands, something just to practice something.
So the program you're developing, you said, is Monkey Fuel, Monkey Flow, and Monkey Mind. I think I understand the Monkey Fuel and Monkey Flow part. Excited to hear more about it as you develop that program. But the Monkey Mind part, I'm curious about, because in my kind of, you know, training and experience with Buddhism, for example, you know, the monkey mind is like a bad thing, right? The monkey mind is like the mind that's always all over the place, you know, always living in the future, living in the past, suffering, too many thoughts, kind of the ADHD thing all over the place. And, you know, in Buddhism, it's they teach to control the mind, you know, use a stick and a leash. You know, the leash is to kind of keep the monkey, or keep the mind from getting too far away, too straight into the future and into the past, which is really where most suffering happens, or all suffering happens, really, mental, emotional suffering. And the stick is to kind of guide it, right? It's like, all right, we go here, we go here, we go here. So in my training of the monkey mind, I'm like, okay, that sounds like a bad thing. But obviously you're talking about monkey mind maybe in a different way. What do you mean by that?
The stick and leash analogy was cool. I never heard of that one. So actually it's the same. I don't know if you've noticed, but when I train, I actually always wear a monkey on my pocket. It's a stuffed animal monkey, and I put magnets on his hands and I attach him to my pocket. So he always hangs on my pocket when I train, and they're really strong magnets, so he rarely ever falls off, no matter if I'm doing flips or whatever. And I started it because of the monkey mind. I had a sports psychologist talk about the monkey mind and how he thought it was affecting me a lot, because I have severe ADHD and I also have OCD, and you know, I would always get into my head. Like, one of the biggest things whenever I were to perform in competitions, I would get in my own head. I would doubt myself like 5 minutes before I'm about to start competing or something. I'd be like, oh, what are you doing? You didn't train hard enough. You're not ready for this competition. Like, you can't, you're not supposed to be here. Like, you're an imposter, like all this stuff. And I would get nervous, and I would flop in performance because of my mind. But my training was so good. I was like, why can't I perform like I train? Why? And it was the monkey mind. I had a monkey on my shoulder, as you probably know the saying of the monkey mind. And the monkey was whispering in my ear all these things of doubt, of like, oh, doubt yourself. You're not supposed to be here. All this negative talk before I was on the starting platform. And when I realized, like, oh, wow, yeah, that's what's happening. And if I just tell this monkey to shut up and like go away, I don't have to listen to you, I would regain my confidence again before performing or before doing anything that made me nervous. And I'm also very forgetful. So I came up with the idea of, why don't I wear a monkey while I compete to remind myself that whenever I have any doubtful thoughts, it's just my monkey mind. And I can kind of just brush it off and then perform at my best. And so I started doing that, and it really helped. So whenever I were to perform, I wear my monkey, and I would squeeze him sometimes. It helped me calm down, and I would just feel more relaxed, and I would have better performances because of that. So yes, that's the monkey mind. But also, I love the way monkeys move. When I train, I love to try to mimic movements of monkey. I think, you know, we come from the ape family, and we've lost a lot of these basic movements that we were meant to do, like crawl, jump, swing, hang, all of these things that we don't do anymore because we're on our phones or on our desk, on our computers, and texting and all this stuff. And I think if we can go back to a lot of these movements, you know, we'll be healthier for it. So that's why that's the monkey flow part. The monkey mind is because the whole program is around monkey, and I like monkeys. But also to help find our monkey mind and clear ourselves from distractions. But then also trying to find what helps us get into flow. What helps us get into a meditative mindset? What can we do? I feel that movement, fuel, and mindset are three pillars that I really like to focus on. So the mindset pillar for me is, how can you find a mindfulness practice to become the best version of yourself? Whether that's breath work, whether that's just basic meditation sitting, whether that's guided meditation from an app like Headspace or Calm, whether that's a meditative walk, whatever it is that can get you into that meditative space. Everybody, I feel like, is a little bit different, or even prayer, but finding some kind of stillness practice that gets you into your own mind. And that's what I think is really important. So finding that for everybody, that's part of that program, is finding what is your meditative space. How can you get into that mindset, into that daily stillness practice?
Nice. I think that's important part of all of our lives as athletes, as just human beings, is having a meditation practice. I know it has helped me in my life tremendously over the last 17 plus years. I mean, dealing with addictions and traumas and abuse and healing from all of those things and childhood adverse events. Like, without meditation, I definitely wouldn't be where I am today, for sure. And all different kinds of meditation. I mean, you know, chanting with Hare Krishnas and Sweat Lodge, singing in deep meditative prayer with Native Americans, and, you know, meditating with Buddhist monks, and meditating in nature by myself for hours on end, you know, trying all different kinds of things, Qigong and sound healing, all these different spiritual practices. I have found tremendous benefit and value in every single one of them. You know, even sitting and having theological and spiritual discussions, you know, about Christianity with Christians, and prayer, and all of these things I find incredibly valuable. And I agree, each person should find a personal meditative or mindfulness practice that works for you if you want to get to a higher level of health and peak performance, and just a higher level of self-fulfillment and spiritual connection as a human being, for sure. Now, about the fuel. Oh yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I just wanted to touch lastly on the nervous system too. I think it's so important. I think mindset is the quickest way to affect the nervous system. You know, where, if you've heard of, I'm sure you have, if the audience, the parasympathetic nervous system and the sympathetic nervous system. In modern world, we're constantly in sympathetic. We're constantly firing our cortisol, and it's the issue to a lot of our it's the problem. It's chronically elevating our cortisol all day is not good for our bodies. And having a meditative practice can help control that and get us more into that parasympathetic state. And learning how to go between sympathetic to parasympathetic is a huge skill set for mental health in general, just to be able to shift from one to another, knowing what breath works or what kind of practices can get us to calm down before bed, which can get us to ramp up before our attempt to work out, is so valuable.
100%. Now, shifting to the fuel part, what does your nutrition look like, and how have you kind of optimized it over the years to support you as an athlete?
So I grew up on the standard American diet, so which is a blessing and a curse, because I was very unhealthy as a child. But I think it also showed that no matter where you come from, you can make changes, because the way I eat now is definitely nowhere near the way I ate how I grew up. So I grew up on McDonald's, you know, Kellogg's, Oreos, I mean, you name it, all that kind of stuff. And when I was around 18, I wanted to, I quit a sport, and I wanted to get into bodybuilding and get muscles and abs. So I got into, like, you know, protein shakes and broccoli, chicken, rice, all this, you know, bodybuilding stuff kind of diet. I didn't like the vegetables, but I ate them just because they were in the diet plan that I found at the moment. And so that's when diet started becoming somewhat, you know, important in my life. I started making protein shakes, I started making recipes to hit my protein and calories and everything. Then, long story short, with how I got into plant-based, I met a girl. She wanted to go vegan as we were dating. She was vegetarian, but she couldn't give up cheese. And I'm really good with diet. So I told her, look, for a month, I'll go vegan with you just to get the ball rolling. But after the month, you're on your own. I'm going back. She's like, all right, cool. Let's do it.
How old were you?
I'm like, all right. I was 20, 21, 22-ish around that time. So for that month, my fiber intake went up significantly. I was eating so much more beans, and we did it wrong. We didn't know what whole foods plant-based was, so we ate, like, you know, Beyond Chicken all the time. I think I had the same Beyond Chicken wrap for lunch every day because I didn't know what else to cook. We had a bunch of fake cheeses, protein shakes. I mean, we made bean burgers, I think, sometimes, but it really wasn't the healthiest vegan diet. But my fiber intake went up.
And then people blame the vegan diet for their health problems and their gut issues and their eczema and, you know, all the issues that come. And they go, oh, it's the vegan diet. And most of the time, when you break it down and go, well, what were you eating? It's mostly processed crap and ultra processed foods. And you go, okay, had nothing to do with the vegan diet. I'm sorry. It had to do with the processed and ultra processed stuff that you were constantly putting into your body.
You have to be specific about whole foods, plant-based, or, you know, it's completely different diet. You can be just as unhealthy as someone on the standard American diet on a vegan diet nowadays, which is crazy. So now you have to be specific of, like, what kind of vegan diet are you on? So we did it wrong in the beginning. And then eventually down the line, I saw my first documentary. I think it was Forks Over Knives. Someone recommended it to me. And I was all in. I got obsessed. I got hooked. I'm like, oh my God, whole foods plant-based. Like, this is it. I got to figure this out. So I did everything. I started cooking from scratch. I cut out all the fake meats and cheeses, went super in on that. Then I read Brendan Brazier's book. I forgot the name of his book.
No.
The owner of Vega.
Yeah.
He's a triathlete. I forgot the name of his book. Thrive, I think. I think it's Thrive.
Thrive, anyways, yeah, Thrive,
Brendan Brazier's book Thrive had specific, like, athlete nutrition for plant-based athletes. So, man, I got into that and I started making his recipes. And I found a passion for being in the kitchen and coming up with delicious recipes that are, you know, high performance based for athletes. Like, that became one of my passions. So I started making YouTube videos about my recipes and talking about plant-based and everything. Then I saw What the Health and Game Changers came out eventually, and I started, you know, my athleticism didn't deteriorate. I got stronger, so I wasn't protein deficient. My blood results were fine, so I'm like, this is it. You know, I feel good. I'm also better for the environment. I'm not hurting animals. So I was in it ever since. A few months ago, I was 100% vegan. Recently, I included some animal products in my diet here and there, but it's not anything I cook. I just gave myself the freedom for whenever my family members cooking something on Thanksgiving or we're on a Christmas dinner or it's my birthday or something like that, I will allow myself to indulge in animal products, but I don't have it in my fridge. I don't know how to cook it or anything like that. So I guess I'm like 99% plant-based, or for lack of a better term. But yeah, that's been my journey, I would say, for the most part now. I've been through the whole foods plant-based 100%. I've been through the junk food vegan a little bit. I've been through a balance of both. And I think a good balance for me personally in my life is you know, around 85% whole foods plant-based, and then the other 15% I do indulge in the processed vegan food. You know, whenever I go out to eat, you know, sometimes I'll indulge in fast food and stuff like that. So that's kind of my approach at the moment. And I feel relatively good on it.
That's awesome. I literally just gave a keynote presentation on a cruise to it was a vegan event and plant-based, and basically that's what I told people. Like, it's a good goal to get to at least 80% whole foods plant-based, whether you're vegan or not. You know, just getting a lot more real foods, whole foods, and plant-based real food whole foods into your diet, you're gonna see improvements in just about everything. I mean, you increase your fiber intake, you're going to see improvements in gut health, especially when you're eating more diverse foods, right? It's not just like you're not just eating beans and rice every day either. That's an important distinction. It's like you might be eating rice and beans, but you're also eating five or six servings of different vegetables every day, five or six servings of different fruits every day, a handful or so of nuts and seeds. You know, you're getting a good diversity of different foods, herbs and mushrooms and onions and berries and things like that. And you're getting, you know, multiple different kinds of foods throughout the week, not just the same thing over and over and over. Like, you had that kind of fake chicken wrap every day because you didn't know how to cook. That's what happens to a lot of people. You know, they don't get cookbooks and learn how to cook. They just find a couple recipes that they just kind of think of, and then they just stick to it. And the problem with that is, you don't end up getting enough diversity in the nutrients. I mean, if you look at, and I've actually done the math, I pulled together, like, what would it take to get 100% of the RDA of every nutrient from whole foods without a supplement on a vegan diet, right? And I put it all together, and it's like, you need good diversity of different foods, because some foods have higher vitamin A, some have higher vitamin C, some have no vitamin C. Some foods have higher, you know, different minerals and, you know, iodine and no iodine and vitamin K1 and so forth, and some have none of it. And so if you get a good diversity, then generally you don't have to worry about it. If you're on a strict vegan diet, there are a few nutrients you should test and measure and check, like B12, vitamin D. But if you're on an omnivore or carnivore diet, you should be, you know, testing anyway. There are a lot of omnivores who test really low for vitamin D and B12. Vegans definitely test lower than most, but you should test you should also test K2. Not everyone converts K1 to K2, and you should test your omegas, you know, DHA and EPA, and make sure you're getting enough, you know, as well as iodine. You know, most of those things you can get on a vegan diet, except B12. Generally, most people can't convert it from the bacteria in their guts, even though some can. So the problem is, there's guys out there that go, oh, you can't get any of these nutrients from plants. Well, it's BS. A lot of these nutrients you can, and vitamin D you get from the sun anyway. So, you know, either a vegetarian or vegan diet with some testing of a few nutrients, you can get every nutrient, amino acid, mineral, vitamin, etc. And maybe you need a couple supplements, right? Just depends how your body converts things. But if you're getting a wide range, whole diverse, you know, nutrient dense diet, majority of your foods from whole plant foods, ideally organic, then you're not taking in all of the pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, and, you know, toxifying your body more. So ideally organic whole plant foods, like, you're just gonna feel better and have more energy and, you know, perform better as an athlete. I see it again and again and again working with people, and seen it in my own life as well.
No, 100%. I'm 100% behind you on that. I think it's not about being perfect. It's about doing your best. And then everybody's an individual. So if you can, you know, get a blood test and find out what your individual blind spots are, like, what are you missing, even though you have, you know, the 80% whole foods plant-based diet. But everybody, like you said, is going to not convert certain nutrients the same way as others. So yeah, 100% backing that up. And also learning how to, you know, definitely learning some staple meals was really important for me. And so what I do personally is I have like I've learned to rotate some breakfast ideas, and then I have lunch and dinner kind of like in the same category, and I like to rotate those recipes throughout the week. But if I find a recipe where I'm like, oh wow, this is good, easy to make, high nutrients, I write down the recipe in my own notes, and I keep a file in my phone, and I'll rotate recipes every week. And that's how I keep the diversity too. So like one week I have spinach, next week it's kale, and other week it's arugula. And then I'll pick a cruciferous vegetable. This week is broccoli. Next week is asparagus. Next week is Brussels sprout. And I'm constantly changing the diversity of the food by going through different recipes every week. But having the staples, I think, is really important. So just to have meals that you know you can make within 5 to 10 minutes, so it's easy, so that you don't have any excuse, and having the ingredients already there. But and then also exploring different recipes as well. Going on YouTube is a great resource. Recipe books are also a great resource. And, you know, finding out for me personally, I think the biggest revelation for me was I don't think I have actually, personally, I know there's people that actually do like the taste of meat. But me personally, I don't think I actually do like the taste of meat. Like I've never really just liked boiled chicken or like just a plain steak. It wasn't really my thing. Like for me, meat was really good when it was fried or it was breaded. It had barbecue sauce or ketchup and mayo. It had drizzled cheese over it. Like that's when I really liked meat. And then I realized if I can just cook tofu or use the same, you know, and all this meat stuff that makes it taste good, it's all plants, like the oil, the seasonings, the sauces. Most of these things that make meat taste really good is plants. You just got used to the texture of meat and then absorb the flavor of the plants, and you put it in a sandwich or you put it with rice and whatever. So if you just learn to use those seasonings and those flavorings in tofu and tempeh or in a stew or whatever you want, you realize the taste is relatively the same. You just have to kind of get used to the texture or learn how to make the texture better for you. But yeah, that was my revelation for me, is rotating, making sure I'm getting a diverse, different plant sources of nutrients, different beans every week, having staple recipes so I know it's easy to hit, and then knowing what seasonings and what sauces I really like that make these foods taste just as good as they did when I wasn't vegan.
It's a good point.
Or plant-based. I'm not vegan anymore.
Yeah, I'd like people to show me any group of human beings that salivate over, you know, a dead rotting carcass and can tear a rabbit in half with their teeth and eat the entire rabbit head to tail, intestines, guts, feces, bones, skin, fur, skull, everything, right? Like people call themselves carnivores today. I have to laugh at it. Like however you want to eat and choose your diet, doesn't bother me at all. I have no problem with it. And I try not to judge, right? The reality is though, you're not a carnivore just by eating steak all day long. You know, you're eating, you know, dead animal flesh. You're eating beef and that's it. Muscle pretty much, right? Like, and some fat. You're not a carnivore if you don't eat like carnivores or omnivores. My dogs that hunt out in nature on their own, I never taught them this, right? They go out when we're hiking through the woods, they literally will catch a rabbit, kill it, and they will fight over it and eat it head to tail. So people who say, oh yeah, we eat nose to tail carnivore, you know, they're eating some liver, they're eating some heart, they're eating some muscle. They're not eating the fur. This is where true omnivores and carnivores actually get their fiber from, is the fur that they eat. That's actually a fiber in their intestines. They also eat plants. Carnivores eat plants. This is something that people who promote a carnivore diet today don't understand or don't want to accept or don't know. Omnivores and true carnivores actually eat plants. And where do they get their plants? They get it from the stomach of the animals that eat the plants. They eat the herbivores, and the herbivores eat what? Plants. And the stomach is full. Stomach and intestines are full of fermenting plant matter. And guess where the carnivore goes first? The carnivore goes straight for the stomach. right? That's their sweet spot. When they get a kill, a lion kills a gazelle, the first place they usually start eating is right at the stomach. They get the intestines, the stomach, the colon. You know, they're eating all of that flesh, and they're eating all the fermented plant matter, right? Like we eat kimchi and we eat fermented plants for the bacteria, and sauerkraut and truly fermented pickles and vegetables and things like that. They're fantastic for our bodies. They feed our bacteria. They help improve our immune system. Well, carnivores do the same thing, but they eat it from the animals that they killed. So the people on a carnivore diet today, unless they're eating like true carnivores, they're not carnivores at all. They're technically scavengers, you know, but even the scavengers eat the full animal from, you know, the bone. You know, they'll pick everything off the bone, obviously, the fur, the organs, the flesh, everything. But they, my point being is they love it. They salivate over it. They look for it. My dogs will find a rotten carcass that's 20 days old and they will eat it. And I'm just like, I'm disgusted, but I'm like, well, that's their nature. Human beings, that's clearly not our nature. You know, we got to salt it up. We got to cook it. You don't have to salt up and cook an orange or a tomato or a cucumber or celery. Or even broccoli. I mean, just raw broccoli is actually pretty good once you're used to eating a more plant-based diet. Like even vegetables that, you know, I used to turn my nose up to as a kid because I grew up also on these high sugar, highly palatable, highly ultra processed foods. And then you eat something like broccoli or carrot, which actually tastes fantastic now by themselves. You know, as a kid or somebody who's not used to it, you're like, oh, these are disgusting. Guess what? When you stop eating the ultra processed, highly palatable, highly sugary processed foods and eat more real foods, those foods actually start to taste really good. I don't see any humans out there eating these dead rotten carcasses, calling themselves carnivores and salivating over it. In fact, they probably get really sick and maybe even die. So you're not carnivores out there. I'm sorry, guys. You're just not. I don't care if you eat like that. I don't care if you eat a plant-based diet. It doesn't matter to me. But, you know, calling yourself a carnivore is just not accurate at all.
I think too, like, you know, they like to point to when we were natural hunter gatherers, you know, I think they only lived what, like 30, 40 years was their expected lifespan. So yeah, they survived on meat, but they didn't thrive. You look at people who are thriving, who's living the longest, healthiest lives, the blue zones are on plant-based diets, you know? So I think that speaks to what we're actually meant to eat. And, you know, we come from the ape family. Apes are herbivores. They are plant-based. We are designed to eat plant-based. That's what we thrive on. We can survive on meat, of course. We can survive on a lot of things, but doesn't mean, but we're not going to live very long. We're not going to thrive for a long time. Our bodies are eventually going to break down. They're very resilient to what we put in our bodies for a long time. But over time, then we developed this. That's why we develop a lot of these diseases, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of the indigenous communities that die really young, a lot of that has been kind of cleaned up from basically basic sanitation. But to your point, because a lot of those diseases, a lot of people, you know, a lot of them die really young from, you know, basic infections that now we have simple solutions for or things like that. But even so, if you look at anthropology and you look at majority of historians agree that most indigenous communities that have lived on planet Earth for many, many thousands of years, go back hundreds of thousands of years to hunter-gatherers, most of them agree that only about 30% of their diet came from animals and 70% came from plants, came from fruit and honey and tubers, came mostly from the gathering, because it was very, very difficult to go out and find and kill an animal. I mean, anybody who's ever gone hunting before knows how, even with a gun, you know, back then, even way back then, they didn't even have bows and arrows, you know, it was spears. You know how hard it is to kill an animal with a sophisticated bow today, let alone a gun, when you're out hiking for hours and hours in the woods? Like you can shoot from like 100 yards away, right? Back then you had to be like, you know, 10 feet away from an animal and get them with a spear. You know how hard it would be to actually kill an animal? So insanely difficult. So, you know, they would go sometimes weeks without any animal any animal food whatsoever. It's just so difficult to kill an animal. So people go, oh yeah, all these tribes that live, you know, paleo diet. It's like the paleo diet was more than 70% plants or more, and there'd be weeks where it was, they were 100% plant-based because they didn't have any animal foods whatsoever. Even that's most people are confused about and don't really understand. And even today, like the Hadza tribe and others, you know, even 70% of their diet is plant-based. 30% only comes from meat. And people go, oh, I want to live like them. Well, then eat less meat, eat more plants, you know, because they, 100%. It's kind of ridiculous. People take these ideas and then convert them to their own bias and their own beliefs. But I mean, look at the anthropology, look at what the historians write about, and look at what people are even living like today. People go, oh, I went and stayed with the Hadza and they ate, you know, animals the whole time. It's like, yeah, but did you stay with them year round? Are they doing that year round? And most of the time, no, they're not. Most of the time they're eating a lot of fruit, a lot of honey, a lot of tubers, you know, a lot of things that they gather, a lot of fruits and vegetables that they actually gather. But even how people used to eat doesn't mean that's how we have to eat today. Certainly getting rid of the ultra processed foods and highly processed foods and more real foods is going to help our health and performance as athletes. That's clear. I mean, that's gotta be number one for most people, right? Most people just are still eating way too much processed crap.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you're on Instagram. I know I follow you at the Street Beast, right? I see you posting like a bunch of delicious looking like homemade ice cream. I think ice cream recipes and stuff that look really good. which are cool. People can follow you there. I know you do nutrition coaching as well. Where else can people get in touch with you?
I also have a YouTube channel, Street Beast TV. But yeah, Instagram is usually the main platform where I'm posting. You can contact me, message me if you're interested in talking or have any questions or want to talk about personal coaching with me. That's usually the best place to contact me.
Awesome. Cool, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on a podcast. Great to meet you, and keep up the awesome work. I'm gonna get going on more mobility now. You've inspired me to add it back in more to my routine now. So
awesome, man. Very cool.
I'm gonna get on it. So appreciate it, man.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, take care.
Thank you for listening to the Nathan Crane Podcast. Please make sure to subscribe and share this on social media. Then head over to nathancrane.com for your free ebook.
So when we're talking about, you know, what are these underlying causes and conditions of these chronic diseases, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, they all have very similar, if not identical, causes. And that's the thing, is when we get to the root cause of these diseases, we can not only prevent these diseases from ever happening, but empower our bodies to heal from them.
In every one of our cells, we have tens and hundreds of thousands of chemical reactions that are happening every second that are cycling back and forth. And it's like sort of a yin and yang.
And, you know, for me, the soul's purpose is evolution. It doesn't care about comfort. It cares about evolution. Mm. And so I think so long as we are following our soul, then we will evolve. And I think what sometimes blocks us from living our purpose, from manifesting that next level of our expression, is we have not evolved.
There is also a time for letting go all the expectations and relax and just breathe and be grateful for what you have achieved.